Americans celebrate our freedom in an amazing salute to America, while others who enjoy unbelievable success, fame, and fortune because of the freedom purchased for them by the blood of brave patriots is spat upon. Meanwhile, Iran continues acting in a maniacal fashion while Miss Iraq kills it at the UN Human Rights Council. It's time for Mideast News Brief. And welcome to your day after July 4th edition of Mideast News Brief. I am your host, Winston R. Holland, and even though I know this is Mideast News Brief, I am a blessed American, and yesterday we celebrated our birthday. Now, for those who may not be aware, actually July 2nd was the day that Congress voted to declare independence, and actually it was predicted that that would be the day of pomp and circumstance and celebration, all of that kind of activity, but it was July 4th that the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence put the pen to paper and made it officially official. So I don't know about you guys, but I had a wonderful Independence Day, had a big party at our place celebrating our freedom, thanking God for his many, many, many blessings on our nation, and even got to watch an incredible salute to America that Donald Trump did outside of the Lincoln Memorial. It was really spectacular. And I just have to say, it was just beautiful seeing our country celebrated and having a president that actually loves our country, that values our country, that fights for our country. He goes into office every day fighting for our freedoms and liberties that are so precious. And they're so precious not because of the ideas themselves that make them precious, but because of the many, many men and women who have given their lives to protect those precious freedoms. So it really was a beautiful display, and especially to have a president doing it that you just know loves our country. And I got to actually afterwards go see a fireworks display at the top of a parking garage. So some of the friends at the party, they'd done that in the past. I'm like, what? But that sounds pretty cool. So we went. It was actually great. No mosquitoes on the fourth floor of a parking garage, and the breeze is blowing, and in South Texas, that is a very, very, very helpful thing. So that was a lot of fun, just a beautiful fireworks display. And, you know, as you kind of sit there and you watch the fireworks go, you just have to, you know, really just think about what those fireworks represent. I mean, those fireworks represent war, represent battle, you know, represent all of the conflicts that America has had to face in order to obtain their independence and freedom and also to keep it. Because there are always those from the very beginning of our nation, and we're talking Middle East, right? From the very beginning of our nation, the Barbary pirates, you know, and I believe it's the United States Marine Corps song where it goes, from the shores of Tripoli. It's talking about, it's specifically talking about the Barbary pirates who were actually jihadists who from the very beginning began to attack American vessels in the sea. And they were pirating. And so, and actually Jefferson went over as an envoy, Thomas Jefferson, to talk to these guys about, you know, in North Africa, about what in the world is going on? Why are you guys doing this? And the Muslim diplomat that he is talking to basically says, well, that's the way we get to heaven. That's the way we get to heaven. And Jefferson's like, what? You know, what is this insanity? And so he purchases a copy of the Quran, and he comes back over and reads it and understands, okay, yeah, there are verses like Surah 9:29 that talk about striving against and defeating the infidel. So it was a obviously an enlightening thing. So, I mean, from the beginning, we have had conflict with what would be considered the Middle East, North Africa, but not just from there, from all over the world. threats to our freedom from the outside and from the inside. And speaking of threats from the inside, you know, socialism ultimately is an unbelievable threat in many ways. And I try to think about, you know, what freedom means to me and what freedom means to many Americans, perhaps like me, who really appreciate and enjoy freedom, what it ultimately means to me. Because I think when we talk about freedom, a lot of times we're focused on economic freedom. Oh man, if socialism comes in, they're going to raise our taxes. You got to raise taxes on everybody. Healthcare is going to be terrible. You know, everywhere is going to be like the post office or the DMV, and that. Well, all that I believe is true. I agree. Now, also, just make sure you make a distinction between socialism and the welfare state. Because you can look at like Norway and Sweden and you go, oh, look, they're socialist states and blah, blah, blah. They're doing fine. Well, no, they're welfare states. They're not pure socialist states. A pure socialist state, there is no private property rights. Everything is owned by the government. Everything is top-down government controlled. There's no freedom of expression, no freedom of speech, no freedom of the press, no freedom of religion. You know, and as I was sitting there watching those fireworks, thinking about what freedom means to me as a Christian, the economic side of things, while it's nice, I love a strong middle class. I love, you know, a very low poverty rate. I love what a free market capitalist system has created in our country. I truly do. I don't want... Now, I'm not as much worried about, like, rich people and stuff, but I don't want people in poverty. And the fact that there is a ladder people can go in and out of, they can get out of poverty and get into the middle class or maybe even into the upper class is amazing. The social mobility is unbelievable. It's unparalleled. And we have it here. Thanks, I believe, to a system that God inspired our founders to create, based off of Lockean principles and a form of government, really, that goes back to Cicero and Plato and Aristotle, that really go back in the Roman Republic before the days of the Roman Emperor. But freedom, when I think about America and the ultimate blessing that I have, guys, it's the First Amendment. The First Amendment to the United States Constitution. Now, question, can you name all five freedoms guaranteed to us in the First Amendment of the United States Constitution? I'm going to help you out with that. There's a mnemonic device that I use to remember that. And here's what it is. SPRAP. I know it's ridiculous, but SPRAP. SPRAP. It's not a word. We can make it a new word here. First on Midi Snooze Brief, SPRAP. It's a new word, or at least a new acronym. But here's what it is. Speech, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, not freedom of worship. Like the left tries to say there's a difference. They're like, oh, yeah, you can go into your own house of worship and, you know, say what you'd like. We're okay with that for now, because they have to transition us and even to more tyranny later. But it's, of course, you bring people to tyranny in stages, not all at once. Freedom of assembly, the ability to assemble and gather into large groups. And the freedom of petition, to petition the government against grievances, right? So if you take that acronym and you memorize it, you are literally one in a thousand. You're one in a thousand because of SPRAP. You're welcome. You're welcome. You're unique and special. Literally only when Gallup surveyed people on the First Amendment, they found that only one in a thousand people knew all five freedoms guaranteed to us in the Constitution of the United States. I was one of those people. I read that and I went, oh my gosh, I don't know those off the top of my head. And so I immediately remedied that problem. I created an acronym because that's how I remember things, is acronyms, mnemonic devices. Just some people can just read stuff and remember. I don't. But those are precious, precious freedoms. And honestly, I think even more than the Second Amendment, I think the autocrats, I think the dictators, I think those who seek to undermine our country and destroy our country from the inside, the left, they hate the First Amendment. They hate it. They want freedom for them and their constituents that'll vote them into power, but not everybody else. If there's one thing that an autocrat is going to get rid of when an autocrat takes over, if that were to happen, it would be the First Amendment, if not the Second. But what does the First Amendment guarantee us? Well, freedom of religion. The ability, and for us as Christians, for those listening that are believers, it is the ability to follow Jesus, to gather together in worship with other believers without fear of the government storming in and arresting us, killing our leaders, killing anybody who opposes us. That's an incredible blessing. Like, instead of having the police come after us, the police protect us if people come after us. I mean, it really is a phenomenal thing. You would have told that to the early Christians dealing with the Roman Empire, they would have been flabbergasted. They would have, what? No, the police aren't on our side. The police are against us. That's not how it is here right now. And it's an incredible blessing. So what do we do with that freedom? And this is the exhortation to my brothers and sisters in Christ. What do we do with the freedom, right? Is it just to get a job or start a business and make a ton of money and have a family and live the good life and enjoy our freedom and just kind of casual pursuits or non-casual pursuits? Or is it to serve God? And there's a scripture in 1 Peter 2:16 that I think this is my Independence Day scripture for all of us. It's not the quote of the week. I've got a great quote of the week coming up from the beer guy himself, Samuel Adams. So stay tuned for that, for the quote of the week at the very end. But this is a quote from the Apostle Peter, 1 Peter 2:16. And this is what he says. He says, "Act as free men, and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bond slaves of God." 1 Peter 2:16, "Act as free men, and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bond slaves of God." Ultimately, God has blessed us with this freedom, that we can take this freedom and use it to further his kingdom, and to use it to do the work that he has called each of us to do. If you're not sure what that is, how has God gifted me? What's my place in the body? You know, maybe you feel left out from the body. Maybe you kind of go to church week after week and just kind of feel like you're just one in a sea of a mass of people. I would encourage you to seek the Lord in prayer about that. Spend time with him. Seek him about that. Look into his word. Do a study of the spiritual gifts. Talk to a good friend or a counselor or pastor about that very thing. Get plugged in, and because we can't do it on our own, right? God did not design the body of Christ for the hand to be able to operate apart from the arm, or the arm apart from the body, right? As bizarre as that would be in real life, right? It's just as bizarre within the church. So make that a priority for yourself. Use your freedom. And this is it's a reminder for me too, because it's easy to get swept up in the day-to-day of life. You got family, kids, school, all this stuff, and to miss the ultimate purpose that we're here, which is to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves, to go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey all that I've commanded you, right? Like what Jesus said in the Great Commission. And so seek the Lord, find your place in the body, and just move forward with serving God. Now, there's a question that actually this, not this particular passage, but the context of this passage actually brings up. Why is that? Well, a few verses before, it's very interesting. It says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority, and to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. Interesting. Wait. I thought that it was okay for the founders to rebel against the king and start this new nation. But it says here to submit yourselves to every human institution, to a king or to governors. I'm not going to answer that question right now. I'm going to submit to you an article from Wall Builders that addresses this very topic, and I will let you be the judge of whether or not, you seek the Lord in your biblical understanding and your research of ultimately the decision that you come to. I do think there's a good argument that can be made that the revolution was actually justified biblically. And just to give you a little spoiler, is that it actually was a war of self-defense, not a war of offense. And that's what the article from Wall Builders actually goes through pretty thoroughly. So it'll be up at MideastNewsBrief.com. And by the way, make sure to subscribe to Mideast News Brief. You can also subscribe to something called Cross Network Global Media. What is Cross Network Global Media? Well, Cross Network Global Media is the parent company of this podcast, not just this podcast, but I am on another podcast as well called Big Tech Small Biz, where myself and another small business owner named Justin Parks, where we actually interview small business owners around the great state of Texas about their successes, their failures, and what God has taught them through it all. So you can subscribe to that as well. And there are many more podcasts to come. I'm lining up shows, getting agreements with show hosts to get shows going. And we're actually looking at having anywhere from 6 to 8 podcasts this fall, if not more. And they're all Christian-based, and they are all from many different topics, whether it's politics, news, technology, health, Bible, apologetics. It's actually going, I actually really wasn't planning on announcing this right now necessarily, but I'm going ahead and doing that. And the way you can keep up with new shows as they come out is subscribing to Cross Network Global Media. I'll put a link to it on MideastNewsBrief.com. But MideastNewsBrief.com actually now forwards to CGM, Cross Network Global Media, CGMRadio.com. And it's actually under construction. We're still building it up right now, but that's the future home where you can actually see all the podcasts that we currently have and the ones that are coming. But it's basically redoing Christian radio in that it's on-demand based, and it's not just one or two topics like, you know, some channels might have kind of half Bible, half politics or something like this. This is Bible. This is politics. This is health. This is tech. This is business, and a variety of shows from hosts that are very proficient in their fields and can provide quality and entertaining information to you guys. So anyway, go to cgmradio.com to check that out. But that being said, if you go to MideastNewsBrief.com, it'll forward to the podcast page on CGM Radio, and there you can get the link to this, to the Revolution article, as well as other articles as well. Now, I'm going to indulge Americanism a little bit more here for just a minute, because it's July 4th, or July 5th, rather, and I'm just so thankful to God, so thankful to God for our nation. And like I said, to me, the freedom to live out my faith in Jesus Christ and to bring my family to a church meeting without fear of the government storming in is an unbelievable blessing not experienced by many people today. Just look at China. Look at the Middle East. It is an utter disaster. However, again, God is on the move in the Middle East in spectacular ways, and I hope to be able to bring you guys more information about that in the coming weeks. God is changing the Middle East. He's absolutely changing the Middle East for his kingdom and his glory, right? But I came across on the Wall Builders website. Also, I came across this article actually a few years ago, and I was just dumbstruck by it. This was just fascinating. I had never heard this before. This should be taught to every kid in school, but I don't. But there's a religious undertonings to it, and so they seem to want to completely get that out of our schools. But have you heard of Dr. Benjamin Rush? Dr. Benjamin Rush. If you are like me, you probably never have before. Michael, our great producer, Michael, is here, of course, manning the mixer. Michael, had you ever heard of Dr. Benjamin Rush before we were talking about it before the show?
I think I've heard the name.
The name. Okay. Okay. Well, hey, better than me. Better than me. He got a better education than I did, apparently. So Dr. Rush, he was a doctor, medical doctor. He was a humanitarian, a political activist, a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Only 56 of those guys in the history of the world. And, if that wasn't enough, close personal friends with two indispensable American figures, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, who had become bitter political enemies in the wake of the American Revolution. Well, one night, Dr. Rush had a dream. Y'all like that? Little transition music there. Break things up a little bit for you. So Dr. Rush had an incredible dream. So like I said, Adams and Jefferson had become just bitter political enemies since like 1800, since Adams took the presidency. And Dr. Rush was distressed by that quite a bit, and he ended up in 1809 having a dream. And he wrote about that dream, and he related it to his son. And this is what his dream said. He said, "What book is that in your hands?" said I to my son Richard, who later became the Secretary of State under President James Monroe. "What book is that in your hands?" said I to my son Richard a few nights ago in a dream. "It is the history of the United States," said he. "Shall I read a page of it to you?" "No, no," said I. "I believe in the truth of no history, but in that which is contained in the Old and New Testaments." "But, sir," said my son. Now, that's very interesting. He was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. But what are we told about all of our founding fathers? They're all like deists and atheists and stuff. But anyway, that's a side note. And actually, David Barton, who's like the authority on this, talks about how 29 of the signers of the Declaration of Independence basically had the equivalent of what we would consider a degree from evangelical seminaries today. So that's more than half. That's pretty incredible. But anyway. "But sir," said my son, "this page relates to your friend, Mr. Adams." "Let me see it then," said I. "I read it with great pleasure, and herewith send you a copy of it." And here it is. In 1809, among the most extraordinary events of this year was the renewal of the friendship and intercourse between Mr. John Adams and Mr. Jefferson, the two ex-presidents of the United States. They met for the first time in the Congress of 1775. Their principles of liberty, their ardent attachment to their country, being exactly the same, they were strongly attracted to each other and became personal as well as political friends. A difference of opinion upon the objects and issue of the French Revolution separated them during the years in which that great event interested and divided the American people. The predominance of the party which favored the French cause threw Mr. Adams out of the chair of the United States in the year 1800 and placed Mr. Jefferson there in his stead. The former retired with resignation and dignity to his seat at Quincy, where he spent the evening of his life in literary and philosophical pursuits, surrounded by an amiable family and a few old and affectionate friends. The latter resigned the chair of the United States in the year 1808, sick of the cares and disgusted with the intrigues of public life, and retired to a seat at Monticello in Virginia, where he spent the remainder of his days in the cultivation of a large farm agreeably to the new system of husbandry. In the month of November 1809, Mr. Adams addressed a short letter to his friend, Mr. Jefferson, in which he congratulated him upon his escape to the shades of retirement and domestic happiness, and concluded it with assurances of his regard and good wishes for his welfare. This letter did great honor to Mr. Adams. It discovered a magnanimity known only to great minds. Mr. Jefferson replied to this letter and reciprocated expressions of regard and esteem. These letters were followed by a correspondence of several years in which they mutually reviewed the scenes of business in which they had been engaged and candidly acknowledged to each other all the errors of opinion and conduct into which they had fallen during the time they filled the same station in the service of their country. Many precious aphorisms, truths, the result of observation, experience, and profound reflection, it is said, are contained in these letters. It is to be hoped the world will be favored with a sight of them. These gentlemen sunk into the grave nearly at the same time, full of years and rich in the gratitude and praises of their country. Did you get that last part? This was 1809. These gentlemen sunk into the grave nearly at the same time, full of years and rich in gratitude and praises of their country. So this is that. What I just read was a page from a history book that came from Dr. Benjamin Rush's dream, all right? So this is a little bizarre. This isn't your typical American history lesson, right? So at the time this letter was written, Jefferson and Adams were still vehement opponents. This is from the Wall Builders article. None of what was described in this letter had begun to come to pass, nor did it seem likely that it ever would. Nevertheless, Adams received the dream from his dear friend with an open heart and candidly responded. So this is Adams saying, "Your prophecy, my dear friend, has not become history as yet. I have no resentment of animosity against the gentleman, that is Jefferson, and abhor the idea of blackening his character or transmitting him in odious colors to posterity. But I write with difficulty and am afraid of diffusing myself in too many correspondences. If I should receive a letter from him, however, I should not fail to acknowledge and answer it." All right, so I have to get on the actual Mideast news. We're at 28 minutes here, so we're going to talk about a little Mideast news. But I encourage you to go to MideastNewsBrief.com and read this historic occasion. All right, and remember, I'm going to give you a little hint. As to the end, again, spoiler alert, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams both died within about 3 to 4 hours of each other on the same day, exactly 50 years to the day of the signing of the Declaration of Independence of the United States of America. They both died July 4th, 1836, 50 years afterwards. And, yes, and became friends with one another. So there's a lot more to it, a lot more information there. Again, go to MideastNewsBrief.com and check out that, read that, get a piece of really interesting, engaging American history, and enlighten your friends at the next cocktail party. All right, so we are going to transition now to what has been going on with, Iran. I tell you something, this is a drama that I'm very, very curious how is going to ultimately develop and play out, because Iran is not taking the sanctions imposed on it by President Trump lying down. But it the sanctions do pose a serious long-term challenge to the regime. As we're going to see in a minute, they're kind of playing politics. Not kind of, they're pretty forcefully playing politics, and I think they're hoping on some level. Ultimately, what it comes down to is this. They're political animals. They understand politics. They understand American politics. They understand that we're in a campaign season, and Trump is trying to be reelected in a little over a year. A year and 5 months or so. 4 months or so. Gosh, time flies. So what their hope, they're hoping that Trump is able to, they're hoping they can wait it out, and that Trump is actually able to be defeated by one of the Democratic candidates who have all but promised they're going to go back to the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran nuclear deal that basically saved this terrorist regime, threw them a lifeline when we should have been just economic warfare out the wazoo to bring this terrorist regime down. That's another story. But that's not what they did. Again, they gave Iran like $1.8 billion in cash that they could take and just spread to all their terrorist friends across the Levant, plus $150 billion. And basically made it to where they could still have a nuclear nuclear weapon in 6, 7, 8 years or so. So that's kind of the issue. So they want that, right? And basically multiple Democratic candidates, front runners, have said that they're willing to go back to that, or they're wanting to go back to that. So the mullahs in Iran are hoping that they can wait Trump out, Trump will be replaced, get someone in there who wants to work with and help out a terrorist regime, and go from there. Because that's essentially what the left likes to do. And we see that in the way that the left communicates about terrible regimes, like we've talked about before, Venezuela, Cuba, whatever. They love these guys, Iran. They love these terrorist regimes, or you wouldn't call Cuba and Venezuela terrorists, but these tyrannical regimes. There was an article I found on the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, which I thought did a really good job laying out the challenge that is faced with the faced to the Iranian regime, because it is a challenge, and I personally believe we're going to win this fight. For one, I believe Trump is going to win. I'm not like even concerned about 2020 at all. So trust me, I'll still be praying, and we all still need to be praying and working toward that end. But I truly believe that Trump will be in office through 2024. So, I guess so. All that to say is that there are serious long-term challenges to the regime that Trump is going to be able to continue. And so I think we could definitely, if not his first term, by his second term, see a toppling of the regime, that they're crippled so badly that we have a repeat of what happened with the Soviet Union. So this is from the FDD, June 28th. New Iran sanctions present a serious long-term challenge to the regime. The Trump administration imposed new sanctions on Iran's supreme leader, right? We talked about this last week, and other high-ranking officials on Monday, a response in part to attacks on international shipping and U.S. assets in the Persian Gulf. So if you recall that back in May, Iran attacked 4 shipping vessels, and then they attacked 2 just a couple weeks ago, and basically they went and through a few means, including placing mines on these vessels. One of the mines didn't go off, and so we actually have video footage of them going and removing one of those mines. But our intelligence tells us that Iran did it, and that Iran was trying to start a war. And we actually, I mean, from what Trump said, we came pretty close. 10 minutes before the strike, Trump asked, okay, how many people are going to die from the retaliatory strike, and I didn't mention this, but from them actually striking down our drone, our unmanned drone, they said 150 people, sir, and he was like, okay, I'm not going to do retaliatory strike, killing 150 people when they shot down an unmanned aircraft. And so what I think was going on there was that Iran is trying to draw Trump into a war. Why does he want to draw Trump into a war? Because it's very, very unpopular. It will hurt him in the election. So be on the lookout, be on the watch. Everything Iran is doing right now, they're going to try to pull Trump in to something that he shouldn't be in to hurt him in the polls. Because they want, you want to know who the terrorist mullahs in Iran are endorsing for president, it's any Democrat, not Trump. That should tell you a lot right there. That should tell you a whole lot about this wonderful group of people. They're likely to, the sanctions are likely to have significant long-term implications for Iran because they entrench restrictions on Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei's $200 billion economic empire. And that was a thing. Remember, never before have we specifically targeted the leader of Iran with sanctions. It's always been Iran itself. This time, we put the squeeze on the leader and the leader's office and top military officials as well. The SLO, the Supreme Leader's Office. Khamenei and the SLO sit atop a network of holdings that touches all major industries in Iran and will be subject to designation under the new Executive Order 13876. The Obama administration clearly recognized the significance of the Supreme Leader's holdings in 2013 when it designated the execution of Imam Khomeini's order, which oversees a labyrinth of 37 ostensibly private businesses, many of which are front companies, for Iran's Supreme Leader and its senior membership. The Trump administration's new sanctions single out entities under the Supreme Leader's control, including EIKO, and effectively puts companies on notice that they must exercise exceptional caution to avoid transacting with them. This year, the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control also published a new sanctions compliance framework that makes clear that all corporate entities, yes, you heard that right, guys, all corporate entities, not only banks and other financial institutions, are responsible for sanctions compliance. It doesn't matter who you are, no doing business in Iran. As a result, many more companies are going to recognize the secondary sanctions risks they face for doing business with EIKO and its affiliates. The new sanctions will also have additional staying power because the basis for their imposition is not for Iran's nuclear activities, but a wide range of aggressive and destabilizing behaviors. So whereas the nuclear deal just focused on nuclear behavior, little pun there, didn't just focus on nuclear behavior, this executive order, 13876, got to be one of my favorite executive orders of all time, does not. And listen to this, that its sanctions target the, quote, actions of the government of Iran and Iranian-backed proxies, particularly those taken to destabilize the Middle East, promote international terrorism, and advance Iran's ballistic missile program, and Iran's irresponsible and provocative actions in and over international waters, including the targeting of U.S. military assets and civilian vessels. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. The shift from the nuclear deal, which just focused on their nuclear activity, they could do all kinds of other, make other intercontinental ballistic missiles and kind of everything else, and it wasn't, it was fine. This does not. It sanctions a whole range of other behavior, really, really, really bad behavior that needs to be stopped. And this is where leadership comes in. Like, what this tells me, because you know what? Trump didn't have to do this, right? Trump didn't have to go this far with what these sanctions do. And he wouldn't have lost a lick of support It's not like I would have gone over to the Democratic Party or something like that if Trump hadn't gone this far. But he is. What is he doing? He's trying to actually create peace in the Middle East and taking again the helm of leadership that the United States has traditionally and a lot of times necessarily taken in the Middle East to promote that peace. Look, we have the strongest military in the world, one of, if not the strongest economies in the world. We are a free nation. We have unbelievable, unmatched influence throughout the world. And what is the United States if we don't take that and use it for the good of all peoples? That's what's going on here. I don't know how to explain it any other way. Because he's going into territory that he doesn't necessarily have to. For those who care about the Middle East, who care about innocent Jews, Christians, Muslims, Yazidis, whoever in the Middle East should love this executive order. Because what is he doing? He's attempting to cripple a horrific regime that's been in power for 40 years, whose time is up. 40 years, about 40 years, biblically is a generation, right? I think it's time. I think it's time to move to the next generation in Iraq. There's opportunity for freedom, and this further puts Iran on the path to that. If a successor administration wants to lift these sanctions, it will be obligated to demonstrate that Iran and its proxies have repudiated all these behaviors. In effect, the new designations reinforce a growing sanctions wall, which will make it more difficult for future administrations to conclude an agreement that only requires Iran to make concessions on the nuclear front. Finally, the information and statements accompanying the new executive order highlight both Iranian corruption and the reach of Iran's illicit activities, including those directly involving the Supreme Leader and the Supreme Leader's Office, or SLO. Over the last year, the administration has presented a steady series of speeches, designations, and guidance that has highlighted the reach of Iranian illicit activity throughout legitimate markets in Europe and Asia. With this action and likely additional designations in the near future, the administration has put companies on notice of just how careful they need to be to avoid entanglement with Iran's illicit activities. So there you go. They have quite a bit to contend with. Right? Quite a bit to contend with. But, as I mentioned earlier, Iran is taking every avenue that it possibly can to avoid these sanctions and to get around these sanctions. And so, again, they're not taking it lying down. They're coming out swinging because they want to hold on to their power. They want to hold on to their wealth. And again, as I went through last week, it specifically targets the Supreme Leader himself of billions of dollars that the Supreme Leader himself cannot access. Because, you know, he's been getting rich while his... supporting all these terrorist regimes across the Middle East and around the world while his own people starve, while his own people live in poverty. He himself, in a unique and beautiful way, is feeling these sanctions. Squeezed by U.S. sanctions, Iran shifts from patience to confrontation. This is July 4th, an Independence Day article by Suni Engel Rasmussen. S-U-N-E, maybe Sun Engel Rasmussen. Tighter new U.S. sanctions have proved more punishing than Iran's leaders expected. driving Tehran to hit back militarily and breach limits it had agreed to put on its nuclear program. This is a Wall Street Journal. This increasingly confrontational approach aims to raise the costs to the U.S. of its maximum pressure campaign and to push Western European nations to offer economic relief, according to former Iranian officials and analysts. And if I could just interject here a little bit. It is unbelievably disappointing. Now, I'll be expected. It's expected. I would expect nothing from the European elites who are of the leftist vein, who more than anything, really more than anything, they care about money and power. They don't care, apparently, that Iran is terrorizing the Middle East and terrorizing the world. It's about money. It's about power. And so let's save this horrific regime when they have an opportunity to work with the United States. If Europe would just cooperate with the United States, I mean, it's game over for the mullahs. But no, they're trying to save, just like Obama was trying to save. They so badly want this Iranian regime propped up. Iran's brinkmanship could present President Trump, who campaigned against U.S. involvement in Middle East conflicts, with difficult questions of war and peace as he heads to the 2020 election. On Wednesday, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said Tehran would enrich uranium beyond 3.67%, a step that would surpass limits imposed by a 2015 nuclear deal between Iran and major world powers meant to keep Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Washington pulled out of the deal last year. So, without getting too much into the weeds about how all this works, in order to get a nuclear weapon, you need uranium. And really, you enrich uranium to like 90% purity. The Iranian, the JCPOA said you can't enrich uranium beyond 3.67%. In the past, they had only enriched it to about 20%. So that was actually like a good part of the nuclear deal, because you want to keep those uranium enrichments low. So basically what they're saying, and because what do they want to do? They want to bait the U.S. into a conflict. If we tell the U.S. we're breaking the nuclear deal and we're enriching beyond what we're supposed to be enriching per the JCPOA, perhaps John Bolton, right, the guy who, as we talked about last week, Trump said would take on everybody at once if he could, John Bolton would be like, Mr. President, we got to go in. We got to take out this regime. It would give Iran the conflict it wants to bring Trump down in the polls and hopefully replace him, get a dove like a Joe Biden or Kamala Harris in there, and go back to the terrible Iranian nuclear deal. Iran breached the agreement's caps on its stockpile of low-enriched uranium on Monday. Last month, Tehran shot down an American reconnaissance drone. Washington has also said Iran is behind a series of attacks on oil tankers, as well as a drone strike on a Saudi oil pipeline. Iran says it isn't violating the deal, but acting in accordance with a clause allowing it to cease its commitments in part or whole if any other party doesn't fulfill its commitments. As soon as the other parties abide by the deal, and by the way, I think he might have a point. Why? Well, because the U.S. was a part of that deal, and the U.S. pulled out. But then you got to ask yourself the question, why was the U.S. a part of the deal in the first place? Was it approved by Congress? Was it a treaty? Was it an American deal? Or was it an Obama-ian deal? If that's probably terrible, my apologies. It was a deal between the Obama administration and Iran. This was not a treaty. So what does that mean? This was done in 2015. In 2016, he knew that someone else could be in office, namely Donald Trump. and could just unilaterally withdraw. Well, what happens if that were to happen? Well, the agreement is not what was signed. In other words, not all the parties are acting in good faith now. And so they're not bound by the agreement. One nation gets out of it, and the mullahs have wiggle room and can claim, like Zarif claimed, that not all parties abided by the deal's requirements. That's why you do a treaty approved by Congress, not just an agreement between the president and a foreign nation. Because then if you don't do a treaty approved by Congress, this can happen. The next administration can just poof, get out if they want. And Obama made this deal with his terrorist regime knowing that it's possible that his successor that he wanted would not be in power. A spokesman for Iran's mission to the United Nations didn't respond to a request for comment. Mr. Trump said on Wednesday on Twitter, quote, "Be careful with the threats, Iran. They can come back to bite you like nobody has been bitten before." And then the article goes on to talk about, just incredible. Their oil sales are plummeting. They have to have oil to survive. So I honestly don't know, because I don't think the Trump administration's letting up. Because Bolton's going to be like, well, if we can't go to physical war, then let's just keep hammering the economic war. I mean, again, I have this, not really love, hate. I don't hate John Bolton by any stretch, but I have mixed feelings, you know? But dude, if we're doing something right and you've got Bolton behind you backing something that you're doing right, you got him at the right place at the right time. And so Bolton is going to be Bolton, Pompeo. They are all about hammering home these sanctions because I think they genuinely, along with Trump, even though they don't say it, I think they genuinely, along with Trump, want to see regime change in Iran. And it's happening. The sanctions are having an effect. And one day we are, I think we're going to see in the next few years. You heard it first here on Mehdi Snooze Brief, but my prediction is that we either see a regime change, or we see I'm not going to go there. I think we're going to see a regime change, because again, Trump is in many ways Ronald Reagan. He's not the great communicator like Reagan was, right? He wasn't he's not as savvy. I say he's very savvy, actually. Maybe not as smooth of a speaker. But the peace through strength doctrine, the love of freedom that Reagan has, I see in Trump, and I think with Iran, we're seeing a repeat of the Soviet Union. Okay, so I was so excited. Well, I'm going to end off with some good news, okay? This is the after July 5th episode of Mehdi Snooze Brief. I want to end off with some good news. I was so excited. You know, allies can come in the most off-the-wall places. You never know. I one day want to share a story about the 1967 war between Israel and its Arab neighbors, when they attempted to Jordan and Egypt and other nations tried just invading and decimating Israel, and in 6 days Israel trounced them. One of the reasons why Israel trounced them, because there was an Arab individual who was in the know about what was going on, gave Israel the heads up, and so they were able to launch a preemptive strike and taking out quite a few Egyptian fighter jets. It's an incredible story. And you go, what's this Arab Muslim dude tipping Israel off to this? I'm telling you, God is bigger. God is bigger than what where our minds place him, or where we think is going to happen, right? This is a little less dramatic than that, quite a bit less dramatic than that, but I want to share that story one day in more detail. But this was from actually Human Rights Watch. So Human Rights Watch is an excellent organization that if you follow them on Twitter or whatever, you want to follow them if you care about what's going on at the UN. Well, they were able to actually send the former Miss Iraq as their ambassador to the UN to speak at the UN Human Rights Council. Now, as I've said before and will continue to say, the UNHRC is a total joke. Is a total joke. If I can just say something real quick, you can follow me on Twitter at @MideastBriefing. I shared this tweet from Hillel Neuer, N-E-U-E-R. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. But real quick, before I get to the Miss Iraq thing, this is what you've got at the UN Human Rights Council. This is what you've got. And this is what Hillel says in his tweet. These countries' laws call to kill gays. Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Nigeria, Qatar, all right? And then these countries sit on the UN Human Rights Council. Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Nigeria, Qatar. So if the UN Human Rights Council is supposed to be about human rights, and yet you have these regimes on there who will kill people because they're gay, that's hardly in line with what at least modern Western liberalism calls for when it comes to treatment of those people. Now, again, as a Bible-believing Christian, I do not agree with that lifestyle, right? But I certainly don't, and I've said it before, and I certainly don't want anything bad to happen to them, right? You can be against the Obergefell decision at the Supreme Court, but still, you know, want them to be able to live free, happy lives, right? So that's just a snippet, right? That's just a snippet of the Human Rights Council. Remember, the Human Rights Council, they give a separate agenda item just for Israel, to bash Israel when they do these meetings. When you've got China, who's got 3 million Muslims in re-education, and like, I want to say enslaved, but they're basically, I mean, they have no choice. They have to go through these re-education camps. Where's their separate agenda item to bash China? It's absolutely disgusting. So the UNHRC is a disgusting piece of garbage. That's what it is. So all that to say, it was so much more exciting, so exciting, when I got to hear, or when I saw this from UN Watch, and to have Miss Iraq take to the mic in a room full of these autocrats, these dictators, these tyrannical monsters, and this is what she says.
Grave violations of human rights in occupied Palestinian territories continue to occur each day with impunity.
Crimes committed by Israelis against the Palestinian people. Israel claims that it fights against terrorism, but it actually practices state terrorism.
Publish the list of companies.
Israel, the terrorist regimes. Knocking Israel.
Israel must be compelled to cease its massive military attacks, collective punishment, blockade,
just wait for it.
Breaches.
2 years ago, I represented Iraq at Miss Universe. I posted a photo with Miss Israel on social media. I was told to remove it and forced to denounce Israeli policies. I received death threats. Since then, I can no longer return to my homeland. Why did the Iraqi government fail to condemn the threats or allow my freedom of speech? The issue between Arabs and Israelis go beyond policy disagreements. It's deeply rooted in the belief system taught in Muslim countries, which are anti-Semitic. Sadly, hatred and intolerance are reinforced by biased media. When I watched the news last month, why did they never report that the Hamas terrorist organization fired nearly 700 rockets at Israeli civilians in one weekend?
Wow.
Or that Hamas used Palestinians in Gaza as human shields? Why do they never condemn Hamas for initiating the attacks? Instead, they only show those killed by the response in self-defense and blame Israel. For advocating peace, I'm called a traitor. Why hasn't a single Arab media outlet called to ask my views? Instead, they publish false translations of my statements. I would like to remind Arab countries that today you share more common interests with Israel than the terrorist militias. Negotiating peace for both states isn't betraying the Arab cause, but a vital step to end conflict and suffering for all. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the former Miss Iraq at the United Nations. She took a selfie with Miss Israel. And now she can't go back to Iraq. But wow, how she called out the UNHRC for the garbage that it is, for the facade and the just fake and phoniness that it is. Pray for the UNHRC. Pray for it. God can transform that. He can. I've never actually prayed for the UNHRC. I think I'm going to. But wow, how she admitted about the belief system in Muslim countries that are taught, that's anti-Semitic, the biased media, how she called out the fact that the Human Rights Council never condemns the terrorist Hamas, but rather launches rockets at innocent civilians and uses them as human shields. And they never condemn the attack. But then what do? They blame Israel for the deaths that come about as a result of self-defense against this terrorist regime. Absolutely beautiful, absolutely amazing to have such a brave woman do that in the UN Human Rights Council, and I thank God for her. All right, so it is the 4th of July, and I want to share a quote from one of the greats, Samuel Adams, a fervent revolutionary who proclaimed liberty, fought for liberty, and ultimately helped America achieve liberty. And here's what he said about freedom and liberty. He said, "If ye love wealth greater than liberty, the tranquility of servitude greater than the animating contest for freedom, go home from us in peace. We seek not your counsel nor your arms. Crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you. May your chains set lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that ye were our countrymen." And we, of course, are the beneficiaries of that posterity and that freedom. And I thank God for that. All right, and that will do it for this week's Day After 4th of July edition of Mideast News Brief. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcasting app and donate to Mideast News Brief. If you so feel led, you can do so in the show notes of this podcast. Remember to visit MideastNewsBrief.com, which of course forwards now to CGMRadio.com for the show notes and links to all the articles referenced in this broadcast. Thanks again for joining us, and remember to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper those who love you. And please pray for America as well. Have a great weekend.